Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to another episode of PWC Talks NXT. I'm your host for the evening, Nate Lindberg, and you follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, which I've got written. I just don't have quite posted up for you yet, but I will first thing in the morning for you guys to check out and read. We just watched the episode of NXT for December 7th, 2021, and what a heck of an ending that was there. We got Johnny Gargano coming out and addressing the crowd about his future in NXT. We've had little hints here and there dropped by not only Johnny Gargano, but also by a lot of the other members of NXT, people that directly and indirectly have been affiliated with Johnny Gargano, most notably Tommaso Ciampa, putting a pretty heartfelt picture and statement out on social media about Johnny Gargano and his potential potentially leaving the company. Is kind of the rumor circulating around, you know, his contract's up, what's going to be happening. And honestly, because of a lot of that, I kind of started thinking, you know what, he's staying. I don't think he's going anywhere. And tonight kind of confirmed a lot of that for me. Tom, you brought up the other day the idea of potentially Gargano coming out and giving his Mark Henry pink salmon jacket speech and then turning on somebody. But did you expect to see somebody like Grayson Waller come out and attack Gargano during the pink salmon jacket speech?
It definitely was not out of the question, but my specific prediction that I put out on Twitter, at Tom Stauff on Twitter, was that due to how he's been referring to himself as Johnny Takeover and had the Johnny Takeover on his gear at War Games, the event that is no longer called a Takeover, that he would phrase it as like, yes, Johnny Takeover needs to walk away. And, you know, he had a hell of a run. But Johnny 2.0 is going to have a hell of a run starting now. And that was my way of, yes, doing the salmon jacket thing, but also incorporating a way to, I mean, NXT is doing everything. And I think we saw a lot of it on Sunday night. NXT is doing their damnedest right now psychologically with this crowd to drag them kicking and screaming into being like, hey, remember like 9 years ago when you guys were embracing new acts? Can we get back to that, please? Because we're doing that again. And I felt like that would be – I felt like Johnny's platform tonight would be an opportunity to do that. And I think it was. I think what we saw was him using the opportunity to put over the brand in an extremely genuine way. This really felt hard on sleeve. It really felt like everything he was saying was – completely truthful and genuine, just with the shroud of, you know, we know that the rumors of the contract, you know, the unstated contract situation is out there, and he sort of made it sound like, oh, well, I don't know yet, but I'm going to go focus on my baby for now. So instead of saying, I'm here to stay, NXT for life, it was Grayson Waller getting some, I mean, you know, as far by today's standards, what seemed like some serious heat that he can sustain, or that hopefully he will be able to sustain over the next few months before Gargano returns after having the baby. I also enjoyed the La Femme Nikita reference. That was very humorous.
La Femme Nikita. Man, I don't know if I actually even watched that. I watched that maybe once or twice, but I did like the reference myself. I think I like what I actually, I know I liked what happened here. And I agree with you. You know, where Gargano definitely put over, some talent here, before taking some time off. I don't think he's going anywhere. Maybe as far as I know, he, you know, we haven't heard anything definitive, like if he's actually signed a contract or not, but I'm going to say probably did. I don't think he's going anywhere because I don't know. I kind of feel like Johnny Gargano needs to get some revenge against Grayson Waller. Bruce, what do you think?
I pulled a Nate.
Hey, Bruce pulled a Nate.
Welcome to the show.
Bruce, welcome to the show. A little bit late.
Thank you. Well, okay. it wouldn't be a show without pulling a Nate, right? It happened one time.
Yeah, I haven't done that in a long time.
I'm going to be the contrarian here. I think he's done.
Yes.
And I think his comments and his demeanor and his emotions are what gave it away. And to me, sure, there's always a chance that he comes back later. There's always that chance. And Candice LeRae is still under contract. I think when a wrestler goes on maternity leave, their time away goes is added back onto their contract, kind of like with injuries. I believe that's how it works in WWE. So she's going to be there for a bit. So there's always a chance he comes back. But to me, especially when he said change isn't fun, but sometimes change is necessary, I think that was the signal that he's going to leave. Now, I wish he would have just had his moment to himself, but this is also where WWE has some, I guess, forethought. It's a smart booking, because if he does re-sign, then he has a ready-made feud for him when he comes back in Grayson Waller for the attack on him afterwards. But if he doesn't, then he gets written off TV this way. And, you know, we could talk about Kyle O'Reilly being written off TV earlier, and I'm sure he will too, but, you know, seeing those two angles both happen tonight, and we pretty much are under the impression that O'Reilly's leaving. I think unless they blow him away with, unless they say he can work NXT but get paid, like, top Raw star money or SmackDown star money, I don't think he's going to stay. Knowing the people that he's been close with and in wrestling and he's been associated with and the styles and what NXT is turning into, or I guess is regressing into, I don't think that necessarily Johnny Gargano may fit in the long term for NXT. Maybe him saying change is necessary means that he's going to Raw or SmackDown, but to me, I think he's headed to AEW at this point just by, well, you know, everything's going on. I think to him, that's probably going to be the most, in my opinion, the most pleasing option. Now, again, it all depends on the negotiation, because he intimated tonight that he doesn't know what's going on. There's nothing that has been signed, but I don't think he's going to be back. And you brought up the Johnny Takeover gear, and to me, him wearing that was also a signal of being like, I'm putting it all out there. This is it. This is, you know, everything I have. And, you know, he's part of that NXT. And I think him moving forward, he sees that, you know, at least to me, I don't think that there's a place for him. I mean, there'll always be a place, but I don't think he will be necessarily at the level that we would all expect the Johnny Gargano to be moving forward in NXT if he does resign. So those are my thoughts. And I wrote as much in the report for tonight. I filled in for Kelly. So if you're listening and you didn't see the report, or you're wondering where Kelly's report was, he was out today and I filled in. So you can check out my thoughts there too. But I think he's gone.
I do agree that doing what they did with Waller is advisable either way. If this is a write-off, I think it still works. But the change can be scary, but sometimes necessary line, especially like after everything that stood out to me that way, that line especially stood out to me as the cherry on top of like, okay guys, it's called 2.0 now and has a different color scheme, but come on.
I understand it's
Johnny
too.
Takeover telling you to go along with it here, guys. So come on, take it from me, please. is how it sounded to me.
I mean, yeah, I get that too, but I don't know. Maybe I'm just giving too much credence to all the things that have been reported, but it's just adding into kind of, I think if he was re-signing, either he's going to win a Grammy or he knew he's leaving and that's why he was so emotional right when he made the entrance to the arena today. So, that's just what I'm thinking. But, you know, I've been wrong plenty of times, so don't listen to me.
That's okay. I'm usually wrong. That's fine. I know what you're talking about. No, you know, it's weird. So one of the things that I've been thinking about, like DIY was one of my favorite tag teams of recent memory, to be honest. I loved DIY. It's really one of the reasons that Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, they're my two guys in NXT. Even before like they kind of became like the face of the brand, if you will. But DIY, they always planted little seeds throughout things, and they always told a great story. Gargano's always great at telling a story. And things like the gear and stuff like that, and having things leak out that maybe, you know, his contract's out and up and stuff like that. I could almost even picture him putting these pieces out there to make people think he's leaving. Like, maybe the contract really was coming up, you know, or whatever, but to make people think he's leaving, especially with the baby and all that, and then to build an angle to kind of put more eyeballs on the brand or something like that. Or maybe not even with that purpose in mind, but just to play the fans. How it's, especially in today's day and age with social media, Twitter, Facebook, everything, how fast information flies. It's so hard to surprise people now. So, you know, kind of going to a couple extra lengths to keep kayfabe isn't out of the question in my mind. And I feel like if anybody is going to do that, that I can think of NXT, like Gargano, LeRae, like, and especially like all the stuff that they put into the way angle and everything, like they like having control of their characters. So it's like, I start thinking about stuff like that. The fact that like Gargano, you know, like you said tonight, the biggest job that he has is going to be a dad. He's going to be a dad. And that's what he wants to focus on. Why would he go to AEW? Like Gargano, a little bit ago, Bruce, like, you know, Candace is probably going to be in NXT for a little bit, especially if maternity leave does work that way, where they tack the months on, you know, to the contract, like, you know, with an injury or something, which, you know, makes sense with, because they do that with an injury. But if that is the case and she's going to be there, like, I feel like with the newborn at home, wouldn't you want to stay in Florida? Wouldn't you want to be at home with them?
I know I'm not talking to the biggest AEW fans, but one, they are based in Florida. So that one, I think that issue is out the window.
Yeah, that's,
because while they do travel, they
are
based in Florida. And two, that didn't stop Bryan Danielson. Granted, they already had a child, but they were just having their second child, and he decided to make the leap anyway, too, right? And he was getting paid a lot more than Johnny Gargano, even before he made the leap. So I think one reason I think AEW, too, is they've kind of become the place that has all the positive in terms of wrestler experiences that have been coming out. They seem to have more of the positive than the negative, right? And that seems to be the case for those who are signing recently, like the Danielsons, like the Cools, like the Christian Cages, and possibly Gargano. Not the people who signed when they first started are not having their contracts renewed, like Big Swole, who was Ariel Monroe in the Mae Young Classic. Couple episodes on NXT. I think, you know, she's great, but she's been battling Crohn's disease and other issues throughout the pandemic. So, you know, a lot of those wrestlers are not being re-signed. And so to me, one, he can fill in those spots that people aren't there for. And also he brings more eyes there. But then the other thing is they seem to be treating all those wrestlers very well. And to me, I think the certain amount of freedom they give you, it might be more appealing than the grind of dealing with the team of writers and producers every week. That's just me looking at it from the outside and trying to, you know, piece together everything. But if it just comes down to the family issue and the location issue, I think AEW has shown that those really aren't as big or as – there isn't as big of a gap there as WWE would like us to think, if that makes sense.
All right, fair enough. As I was saying, I'm usually wrong, so you know that works. No, fair enough. And I forget what I was saying. I was going somewhere with that, but that's okay. That's okay. That also happens a lot too. I forget where I'm going. So with that, does anybody else have anything to say about the main event, or should we go to the callers? Our main event segment. You know what I mean. Okay.
If there's one thing that just really turns me off about NXT, it's the crowd. But they were pretty good during Gargano's segment, and that's to be expected.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think they were great during Gargano's segment. And I feel like they gave like some nuclear heat to Waller as well. Mm-hmm. Like it came across like oh man, I was getting some like serious like Triple H like. I don't know. This is just like the first like heel I could think of off the top of my head, but just like some serious nuclear heat vibes coming off the crowd and directed directly towards Waller. if
Waller, because he does so good in it and he reveled in it. So good job to him. He did not look like that part was too big for him. He was made for that moment. It seemed like
100%.
The only thing I would have changed about that was to say don't pose. Like, the show went off the air with him posing right next to the crowd. Like get move away from the crowd, because these, you know, fans these days. I say this after that Seth Rollins thing happened, but, you know, for the most part, fans these days are not barricade jumpers. They know that even when they feel as passionately about something as a lot of the fans in there did vocally tonight about that attack, they're not going to actually try to attack the person, because they know it's a show and they're not that wrapped up in it. And so when you have that great angle that they had at the end tonight, and then you pose in front of the crowd that are still obediently just sitting there when they could easily take a cheap shot at you if they really felt that strongly about it, that gives it up a little bit. So I would have said, like, go pose in the ring or just not right next to the barrier.
That's true. And one more thing on Waller is I think I really liked how he took what LA Knight said to him and turned that on Gargano and said it right into the camera and let everyone know, even though, you know, whatever you might think of him, he turned the whole, you know, I get the clicks and the views or whatever into his little thing that made sure that added to his nuclear heat at the end.
Great point. Yeah.
No, 100%. You know, and like, Waller hasn't been somebody that's, like, been impressive. Like, his in-ring stuff has been, you know, has been good, but, like, his character, like, I haven't really been super jazzed about it. Like, so it kind of came out of left field for me tonight that he came and just fell into this heel role so well. I didn't think he had it in him, and by God, I think he might. I think he might. So I definitely need to give props and give credit where credit is due. So with that, let us go over to the phones. I believe this is Reverend Keith. Let's go and say hi. Is this Reverend Keith?
Yes, it is. Good evening, gentlemen. How are you?
Not too bad. Not too bad. About yourself tonight, my friend?
Fine. It's always good to talk to you, Nate, Tom, and now tonight we have the aspiring snafu. How are you, Doc Bruce?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Fine. Listen, I'm just going to make a couple of points, and then I'm going to step aside and let you guys communicate on them and then take a few other callers. I was pleased with the way that NXT 2.0 wrote off both Kyle O'Reilly and Johnny Gargano. Now, I rarely disagree with you, Mr. Aspiring Snafu, but I do believe that Johnny will return. He and Candice are so close, and I can see him wanting to stick around mainly because of her. Now, it's easy for him to go to AEW or back on the independent scene, but the money is not as good, or perhaps it may not be as good. But what I'm saying is that I think he will return. Now, as we discussed, Nate and Tom, on Sunday night after the War Games show, Grayson Waller, he is someone to reckon with. Remember, we talked about that. So
I don't remember what I had for breakfast, to be honest with you.
Okay, well, we just discussed that 48 hours ago. But anyway, you're forgiven.
I'm in the middle of trying to figure out where I'm going to be living in the next 3 weeks. So my brain is even more of a mess than normal right now. So forgive me. I don't even remember what we talked about the other day regarding Grayson Waller.
We were talking about the budding stars, Cora Jade, Grayson Waller, Bron Breakker, Carmella Hayes. Remember that discussion coming off of the pay-per-view Sunday night?
That's right. That's right. Yes, I do.
Right. And Tom had stopped me before I stepped off the phone to discuss what I saw in Grayson Waller. And I think all of that was evident tonight in the main event segment. He really stepped up. And like you just said, he took what L.A. Knight said and used it to his advantage. I thought it was well portrayed how the two write-offs went. You know, we almost a 99.9% sure that Kyle O'Reilly will head over and join Fish and Cole. However, I do think that Johnny Wrestling is not done yet in NXT, but I like how he put over the young stars. I like how they're building towards perhaps a Mandy versus Cora Jade match. And it looks like we're going to have some fresh feuds. You know, I can see Carmelo Hayes interfering in that match with Roddy Strong and Bron Breakker, which should be a barn burner next Tuesday night. So I'm going to step aside, guys. It's always good to talk to you gentlemen. Let me know your thoughts. Thanks for taking my call, and we'll speak soon.
All right, Tom, I'm going to throw to you because Corbin's making a lot of noise.
Imagine that. No, I appreciate the points, and I just I will add that Waller being the star coming out of the men's War Games match seems to be the company line as well, after Andre Chase even pointed out to Tony D'Angelo that Waller was the star coming out of it. That actually surprised me a bit, because I figured that they would have said Bron Breakker. But, Bruce, you got anything on Keith's thoughts?
In regard to if Waller had the big moments in the match, but I think D'Angelo did more in the match, if I remember correctly. I was kind of watching and looking at other things too, but in my recollection, D'Angelo actually had to do more of the things in the ring while Waller had some big spots. But I do think that Carmelo Hayes is actually the person they should be talking about coming out of Sunday. And I know why they're going to Bron Breakker, of course, because he pinned champion, you know, all that, and they're getting ready for the next match. But Carmelo Hayes, as Wade Barrett said today, was the workhorse of the literal workhorse for Team 2.0 on Sunday. And another reason I bring him up is if you watch tonight, everything that happened in the ring, Carmelo Hayes was selling his ribs. The point that really just put it over the top for me, like, he is the A champion that he says he is. When he did his springboard clothesline, if you watch on replay, he was holding his ribs with his left arm the whole time. He did not let go. He was selling it the entire time he was performing the move that in midair people aren't even going to see. So he gets it. He is going to be... He already is a star, and I think he's who they should be circling and coming off of. And, you know, I understand why going with Breakker, and Waller had those big moments. But the end of the match on Sunday, Carmelo Hayes is the reason why Team NXT 2.0 even had a chance, because he pulled the ref from making the three count and then worked on Ciampa before Breakker was able to – he kind of basically sacrificed himself so that Breakker could spear Ciampa through the table. So I think – that's who we should be talking about, is Carmelo Hayes. Waller's going to be fine. He has the look. His in-ring is getting better. He definitely has a character. But to me, when you're looking at, if we're going to use like the four pillars terminology that AEW is using, Carmelo Hayes is definitely one of those four pillars. You know, him and Bron Breakker for sure. But I think Hayes is definitely the person that is basically what we thought Swerve was going to be in NXT. If that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Nate, stop me if you are back, but... Oh, I heard an inhale.
I was about to say I'm back, but
hey,
go ahead,
okay.
finish your thought.
Oh, no. If you weren't back, I was going to tee up another segment to talk about, but let's go to another caller.
All right, so let us do that. We're going to go to our good friend, Darrell. Darrell, how are we doing tonight, man?
Hey, how are you guys doing tonight, man?
Can't complain. What'd you think of the show?
It was a pretty good show. Good last show for me. To start it off, I like how they followed up with Cora Jade when she came out and she said what she said. She it's similar to, it seemed like how they have her speaking and how they had her coming off. If she felt more like how they used to have Bayley coming off back when Bayley was unassured, but she was wanting to just hug people and she was just not sure of herself and trying to find the confidence and stuff like that. So I was liking that feel that they was giving off, even in the back when they had her speaking with Raquel. Raquel, I like the interaction. You could tell, and she was saying, "What if I win and stuff like this?" So the happy go lucky, type of attitude. I like that feel. I like that feel about her almost. I feel like Liv Morgan and stuff like that. So that was pretty cool. It'll be interesting to see what they could do with her. But how did you guys take that so far?
So far, I've been really liking what we've been seeing out of Cora Jade, especially the last couple of weeks. And I get a lot of what you're saying with the Bayley comparisons, and even some like the Liv Morgan stuff. It's kind of like a little bit of almost like a mash there in some ways. But I think they've definitely got a winning combination here. She's endearing. She certainly has the capability in the ring. I feel like, you know, she's still got a little ways to go. I feel like they definitely have the makings of a star here with Cora Jade. Tom, what do you think?
Just as my notes refresh. Okay, no, I'm still in the right spot. That was so weird. They refreshed. And anyway, Cora Jade, War Games was such an incredible night for her. I mean, more than anybody else who appeared on the whole entire show, that it was going to be tough to do a suitable follow-up to that. And I feel like tonight fell short of that for her. I guess it's hard to even think of specifics as to why. It's just that I'm not sure she sounded as strong as her performance was on the microphone. And then we've got the situation where not just she, but also Raquel, and now also Tiffany Stratton, who hasn't wrestled on the brand yet, are mentioning that they want the NXT Women's Championship, so it's not focused on her, when we were already at a point where Kaylee Ray felt like, I mean, was absolutely being presented as next up for Mandy. And then Kaylee, I don't know what to make of that Kaylee situation. I Googled her name and hit news after to see if there was something I missed. She's like, hey, this new gimmick that I have, I don't need it anymore. You can have it now. And she walks away. Like, into the sunset? Like, what? Like, I'm questioning whether Kaylee's gone more than I'm questioning whether Gargano's gone. That was wild. And I've said that Kaylee does not need a baseball bat or anything. She's fine without any of that. But that was just strange. So I guess that's where my head's at regarding all of that.
And Bruce?
I think Cora Jade is someone who, when she was out there in front of the fans feeding off the energy, did pretty well on the mic. The backstage segment is where I feel like you could really see the grit in her. And one thing that really stood out to me about her backstage comments to Raquel is she said, if I have a championship match, I could be the next women's champion. I go, no shit, that's how a championship match works. Like, you know, if you're in a match with a champion, you have a chance to become a champion. That's exactly how it works. Those are the kind of things where I'm like, she doesn't feel confident enough to be there without the scripting, or at least to improvise a little bit. And I also don't feel like, for me, having Raquel Gonzalez back in the title picture, like, interests me right now. I think it would have been better just to start building her back up a bit and then eventually getting her there instead of putting her – she's basically been in the women's championship picture since she became champion. And, you know, she lost the title and everything too, but she's still there. And I just think she needs a bit of a refresh, you know, being built back up. It also appeared that the shoulder injury off of that senton where she did not rotate fully was legit. And – or they're just working us really well. But I think considering that she couldn't get physical, at least the portion where she went back and forth with Toxic Attraction was done well, because she pointed out the fact that she's now she pinned Mandy Rose and then she helped win the War Games match over Mandy Rose's team. So she's laying the foundation there. It's just what happened afterwards to me that brought her back down a bit. And I think what Tom was saying about not being sure why, to me, the why is in that backstage segment.
I definitely hear you, because like out in front of the crowd, she certainly had an energy and a vibrance to her. And like, you know, when you're behind the scenes without that crowd, it's a different beast. It's a different beast being in front of a camera and more than likely that wasn't live. That was probably pre-taped and probably a couple different takes and whatever. And it's like, I don't know. I give her a little bit of a pass in the backstage stuff because her in ring and in front of the crowd, she's doing a little bit better. And I feel like she can probably kind of grow into that. But I definitely hear what you guys are saying, because that certainly, especially the choice of words. I hate WWE scripting. People just don't talk like that. They just don't. However, I did think of something. Tom, you mentioned four people. Both of you guys just mentioned four people that are up for the NXT or have kind of laid claim to the NXT women's title. We had Gonzalez, we had Stratton, we got Jade and KLR. Well, if we're going to be taking TakeOver out of the names, I guess the next one could be Fatal 4-Way, and the winner just goes on to face the champion, right?
Don't tarnish the first Fatal 4-Way with that, Nate. Just don't do that. That's one of my favorite matches of all time. Don't do that, Nate.
Come on. It's, you know, guys, it's 2.0, but this is 2.0. It's 2.0. Durrell, stop me.
Well, it's not 2.0. It's Vince and Kevin Dunn 0.0, but with everything.
Dunce 0.0.
Yeah. And got my next point, point out a few things on about it. One thing I have to disagree, two things I have to disagree with Doc Bruce about. The Carmelo Hayes thing, yes, he was the workhorse, but the only thing I have to disagree with you about is saying that he's a much better swerve.
I did not say that. I said he's probably what we hoped Swerve was going to be.
Swerve would be. Yeah, so that would be almost trying to say, like, kind of better or whatever. Is I would have to say the character that they were trying to originally have him play with the urban feel, they starting to dumb it down with catchphrase, because whatever writers they had writing with that was so off the mark, especially when you haven't heard Trick in probably 2-3 weeks say body body, that was 30-year-old saying and stuff like that. So, you know, if they were trying to tap in a different market, those two wouldn't be the ones that they could tap in with, especially with the writing. But I should have been more specific.
I didn't mean in character presentation. I meant in terms of trajectory as champion. Like, we all thought when Swerve came in that he was going to be champion, like NXT champion, and that never happened. I should have made it more about like that. I should be specific. I mean in terms of the character presentation. I meant in terms of becoming champion.
Got you. They're trying to build up the three different titles in the ways that they're trying to do it. But going into the whole thing, I would play contrarian on some of these write-offs that they did. I felt like they were so Vince and Dunn-esque with how a lot of them were done. With Von Wagner doing another person doing another nut shot that was just happened 48 hours ago to get the win, and it just took me out of it right there. I know they tried to save it with the beatdown afterwards, but I guess that was okay. And how the fans were messing with him all night. This is why I felt like neither him or Grayson Waller, they were getting nuclear heat. To me, it sounded more like go away heat, because you could hear them booing Grayson Waller when he was, I guess, coming through the audience, and like they was trying to boo and tell him no, go away. They wanted to hear what Johnny had to say. So I understand what they want to do, what they're trying to do. It would have been nice to see where they go with it and what kind of stories that they tell with these things. But I just couldn't get down with it, because it seemed the typical WWE thing to do, which is just beat you silly in a silly way with silly things and write people off, and just so you'll never mention them again, never say their name, not even put it up online or anything of the sort. So that heat that you would get from that, you can't remind people of it, even if you have new people of it, because you'll never replay it again. You'll never say anything again, which that's not like people leave jobs, leave teams all the time and go to a different team. Don't mean you stop talking about it. You use that to fuel the heat of your fan base and stuff like that. So that was such the Vince S thing to do. That's why I'm saying after tonight, I really see that NXT, especially after that interview that Shawn Michaels gave, I think yesterday or today, about the control that Vince them had, it seeming even more like not NXT 2.0, but Vince 2.0, and especially with that Stratton character that's coming, because I can't see another one of those type of characters. I'm glad I won't be able to see another one of those type of characters again. What do you guys think about that?
As far as like the heat between Von Wagner and the heat that Grayson Waller got at the end of the night, I got – so with Von Wagner, I kind of, in a way, maybe got a little bit of, like, that go-away heat. But I feel like he did kind of get the crowd behind – well, not behind him, but against him, but for good ways. I was actually pretty impressed with Von Wagner on Sunday and again tonight. Not as much tonight, I feel like. He was a little bit more exposed. You're able to hide a lot of his weaknesses and things during a tag match where he can tag in and out and things. He doesn't have quite nearly the ring time as he did tonight. But he kind of feels a little bit more at home in the ring. A couple of the things that like I've noticed is like there are times where he's just like almost looking around like a lost puppy. Like he doesn't quite know where he is or what he's doing. Like, and I don't know if that's just like his natural demeanor or like if he's actually getting confused. I don't know, but, or if that's even what's happening, but that's what I get. And that's what's coming across to me on, through TV, or at least has anyway. And I got less of that. I didn't really get any of that on Sunday and I got less of that tonight. So I don't know if it was necessarily like go away heat, all of that for Von Wagner. For Grayson Waller, I think it might be a little bit more mixed, but I think it's more like, I feel like it is kind of more like nuclear heat in the way WWE wants it for Grayson Waller. Because like when he came through the crowd, like as soon as the crowd started going nuts, when Gargano was starting to talk about, not coming, essentially starting to say that he wasn't going to come back or do other things for a little while, the crowd started going nuts. I knew somebody was about to attack him, right? You knew it was coming. That crowd is smart enough to know Grayson Waller was about to attack him. So I feel like it was probably like a, oh my God, this is happening. Like somebody's attacking Gargano in the middle of this, like kind of like that surprise, and I feel like that's kind of ties a little bit back into what I was talking about a little bit earlier with Gargano and planting seeds for like big moments like this. And kind of like trying to build around big moments like this. He gives this really heartfelt promo with a lot of real emotion. I mean, he probably did go out there, if he didn't know what his contract status was going to be, yeah, he's probably had a lot of these emotions and things up until now, if he did actually resign. So you play off of that, which I feel like he's certainly the type of performer that can play off of an emotion. I think he's shown that to us time and time again in NXT. But he can play off an emotion like that. He gives shout outs to everybody, that people like names we've never heard. Some names we have heard, like, Terry Taylor, Matt Bloom, were a couple of the names you threw out there. But there were some names, just some guys that, write, and produce packages and things like that for people. So, these are all people he's worked with for years, and he can kind of feed off of that energy, emotion, and passion for NXT to deliver that type of impassioned promo tonight. That probably wasn't scripted. They probably just allowed him and trusted him to go out there and give that type of a promo. Just kind of like what he said at the beginning, hey, Hunter, he said heartbreak. Let me, you know, told me, did he take as much time as I need? Yeah, that's right. That's why he mentioned La Femme Nikita and all that. That's right. But my point being is, with all of that heartfelt equity, if you will, right, we aren't necessarily expecting an attack. We're expecting a goodbye, and we're all thinking about a goodbye. Yeah, Corbin. Corbin agrees, or at least he's speaking. But we're all expecting a heartfelt goodbye, and we don't expect an attack. And then that attack happens, and I feel like that nuclear heat is really like the heat we heard tonight was like legit nuclear heat for him. We'll see what happens next week, especially with that crowd. But we'll see what happens next week. But I got some goosebumps during that segment. I'm not gonna lie. There was something else you brought. Oh, with the Tiffany Stratton character and stuff. I'm intrigued by this character simply because of like the Olympic connection and stuff like that. But yeah, daddy's girl character in 2021, like that could have worked in, you know, 2001, 20 years later. I don't know. I feel like you could do something like put her in Diamond Mine for Christ's sake, you know, make her some badass Olympian. Don't make her some daddy's girl Olympian. I don't know. I feel like I've flapped my gums for a while. Bruce, why don't you flap yours?
So it's interesting that Darrell thought the crowd was booing Lawler coming in. I thought from what I was hearing, I thought they were screaming at Johnny to let him know that he's about to get attacked. And props to Johnny being a pro, just trying to talk over them and get through his words, right? But that's how I took it. So maybe I just wasn't hearing things right. I have one earphone in when I do this, so I could hear if anyone's calling me or whatnot. So maybe I just didn't hear all of it. In regards to Wagner, I think, like you said, Sunday and tonight were good showings for him. I think in the match tonight, while there were, as you said, you can still see he's green. I think tonight really showed the potential that they see in him. Like, you can see it tonight. There were some smooth parts for him. I think he took some bumps. Well, Kyle O'Reilly was a bump master tonight in that match. I do think his finisher lacks a bit of oomph and impact. And so to me, it kind of had an anticlimactic ending to the match. And I understand the logo happened before, but it just seemed like a twisting butterfly suplex doesn't seem as effective as it sounds. And so I think if he could just maybe add a little twist or just slam him down a little harder, then his finisher would look better. In regards to Tiffany Stratton, I made this comparison on Sunday, and I think Tom agrees with me. She's Paris Hilton in 2021, basically, and without the athletic, Paris Hilton with some athletic acumen, right? And the reason why I'm so intrigued is I think they've done really well in these vignettes building up who she is. And the part that I think they've done really well on is they've never shown her face yet. Even in all the videos they showed tonight of her, or the home videos of her doing gymnastics, you couldn't see her face clearly. So we don't even know who she is, really, what she looks like. Unless, you know, you do some background research on her. But if you're just going with the kayfabe, we have no idea who she is. Except that she's this rich girl who can get whatever she wants. And yeah, she's actually athletic too. She can do some things. My only issue is whenever they have athletic or gymnast characters in WWE, I think of Alexa Bliss and Reggie, and they just kind of turn into – Alexa Bliss, when she first came in NXT, was that sparkly cheerleader, kind of did the gymnastics stuff, right? And then Reggie's doing his 24/7 things. I don't think that's the route they're going to go with her. She's immediately shooting for the NXT Women's Championship, and she made that clear tonight. So I think that they're going to have her come in. And what I would like to see is her only use her gymnastics as kind of fail safes or as her trump card, for lack of a better term, and not something that she relies on. Because I think that will show more depth to her character than if she came on just in all the gymnastics stuff. I understand why you do that to build the character, but I think you want to show more depth than just what you've already said she's going to be. And so I'm intrigued. I don't know anything about her background except what they've shown on TV. I haven't done any research into her, so I can't say anything about what she's like in the ring. I just hope that the interest they've drawn from me with these vignettes is repaid with her character and in-ring presentation once she does debut.
And Tom?
Okay. I think my only takeaway from the cage match is the fact that Wagner got "you still suck" chance throughout the whole thing. And I have no idea why. I don't know why people are being
so resistant.
The crowd pissed
me off, man.
Yeah. It's just, you know, so many of these people are the same exact people who, like, embraced Aiden English when he came out singing. And now if Aiden English came out singing, they would tell him, "you still suck." I don't know. Okay. So I don't forget to pass through these other things Darrell mentioned. I will say that the direct quote, as Zach Haydorn wrote up on from TV Insider that Darrell is mentioning, the exact quote from Shawn Michaels is, "People out there thinking it's all Vince McMahon and Bruce Pritchard type of production, they are just the ones who give us the direction of what it is they wanted from NXT going into the future. It is still all the Team Hunter Triple H put in place doing it here." So you have kind of the Shawn Michaels vernacular there, but you get the point. And that's the impression that I have gotten from the product. I know other people have said, well, it's all Bruce, Vince and you know, Laurinaitis. And I don't think the fingerprints are that strong. I think the fingerprints are where, but my interpretation, you know, without being there in the building, is feeling like the fingerprints are where they need to be, that this is still being guided by different hands, but they are now finally, after all these years, having some communication of like, hey, here's what we're actually looking for, rather than just taking what you're giving us anyway, here's what we're actually looking for. And I guess the phrase I'll choose to use is agree to disagree on the way that they're seeming to write people off, of course, with Gargano, assuming that the consensus here is correct that he will return. They probably will go on to mention that. But I think while it can be awkward sometimes to not mention certain things, and of course there are situations where it's like, all right, you're breaking the illusion now by not mentioning something that we all know of. Just go ahead and say it, guys. It's not going to hurt you that much. So I agree to that extent. But it's still we call it a promotion for a reason, because they are promoting things. And if they're promoting something, if they mention something, that's part of the promotion. And if they're not going to make any money off of mentioning it, then why mention it? So there's that. Tiffany Stratton, since we're there, she wrestled on the November 19th, 205 Live. And I know I've been saying for a while, like, okay, I'm still not watching 205 Live because I don't need any more of this stuff in my life, but they have basically become, the show has basically become the main event to, you know, quote unquote main event or superstars or you know, whatever you want for NXT. And it shows off a lot of people who are just enhancement talent on NXT now, or up and comers like a Tiffany Stratton, and you do get to see glimpses of it. So Stratton, seeing that Stratton had wrestled on there, was finally what got me to go like, all right, I'm going to check this out. And since I'm there, I'll just kill my one point that I have on what Joe Gacy had to say, that if he's actually going to change the name of 205 Live, great. Cause it's not what that show should be called anymore. So fantastic. And maybe it'll get some more eyes on it since it actually is worth watching now. I tuned in for the Tiffany Stratton match and I watched the whole episode cause it was all really good. Yeah, she does incorporate the gymnastics to an extent. I think when I said that I hope she does it similar to how Charlotte Flair did it when she first came to NXT, I think that was accurate because it's about the same amount of incorporation. She did a tumbling maneuver once to dodge something that Amari Miller threw at her. And most of what she did in the match, which was a perfectly consummate match, Amari Miller was doing a lot of the work. A lot of what she did was incorporating character stuff, which you guys know I love so much. When she was doing well, she would hop up and down and be all giddy and clap to herself like a schoolgirl. And when she wasn't doing well, she would whine and cry and beg off. And I love heels like that. The really rocky part was that they gave her a pre-match promo, and you can hear it a little bit in the the post-produced video package, which I totally agree with everything you said about it, about these video packages, Bruce. In the ring in front of the crowd, you can sort of see her searching for the lines. Not all of it feels entirely genuine. She had some good scripted lines in there. My favorite was when she said, "I'm Tiffany Stratton, but if you follow me on Instagram, you already knew that." And I thought that was a really good line. But then she's just trying to hit every, like, what are every single thing that my character might say in this situation? And, like, no ideas got left on the cutting room floor, and she's just, like, throwing everything at the wall to see what sticks. So there's some honing to do. It's definitely a work in progress, but my optimism is very much intact. And I feel like there was one other point I wanted to make about Tiffany. You know what? I'm going to get plenty more opportunities to speak on her, so I'll leave it there.
All right, Darrell, do you have any follow-up? Or we'll give you one more, because we actually have quite the mailbag tonight.
Oh, yeah, this was last one. And to play back to Tom and the other show, when you're going back and looking at NXT, Roman Reigns, I probably remember him being on before he joined the Shield, and then they used to come out there and help Seth Rollins. Him being on maybe one or two NXTs, and he cut the one promo that everybody was big on, that few the fandom and said that he needed to be a heel when he was so-called getting pushed down everybody's throat, the one with Mr. Nice Watch and stuff like that, that showed that true type of potential. And I know that word has been used for people on this show, but I haven't really seen it with anybody probably besides Bron Breakker. And if you go back and you watch, you could see that he had something. And if you go back and watch him when he wrestled a lot on FCW, you could see that he had the skills to go with that one line, that couple line promo, and what you see today. And that takes me to someone like Bron Breakker, who I wish they would transition him into the feud that they finna go in, this mini feud with Roddy Strong, and then allow him to get the title match and stuff like that. He didn't even really have to be in the War game because how intriguing he is and everything of the sort now. And I wish they would have did this before, because I would love to see where this go and him in the match and how this build him back up for Ciampa and stuff like that. But since Roman Reigns, I feel like he's probably homegrown talent and got the most potential is Bron Breakker. And, yeah, he's saying a little bit more than Roman and that promo that he cut. But I feel like when you look at, like, can't-miss talents, out of everybody, he probably the only one. To me, most of the other people might not be nowhere near that level, but that's someone, and that's what I compare him to and stuff like that. And after this, y'all let me know this. I listened into the end of the show, and it was good talking to you guys and following you guys on this journey for so long, man. I'm going to try sometime in the future to tap in and listen and see what you guys think about the shows and stuff like that. And also, Tom, if you go back and look at two NXT UK shows that Shawn Michaels been head of creative over there for probably the past 2 years, especially ever since the pandemic. So he was over two Walter matches and stuff like that. I think you would change your mind in thinking that he having anything to do with this type of creative, and you will see the split is different. And that creative will remind you of that old NXT that you used to like. And we all used to like, especially when it was an hour-long show, too. So I think if you watch two episodes, you'll probably change your mind on that. But happy to talk to you guys, and see you down the road.
All right, Darrell, as always, we thank you, and we hope to hear from you at some point again in the near future. Thank you. It wasn't quite expecting that, it's been good, and we'll talk to you down the road. With Breakker, I see like a lot of the comparisons to like Roman Reigns and things like that. And I certainly think they've they've got something with him. One of the things that, like, kind of I started thinking of really just in the last few minutes, right? So Tom started talking about rebranding, you know, the rebrand of 205 Live, which kind of seems inevitable. And Malcolm Bivens mentioned something about the cruiserweight title weight restriction being lifted now is what I meant to say. If they're going to be turning 205 Live into like the main event for NXT, and they're going to be using the cruiserweight title, most likely they'll probably rebrand that as well. Why call it a cruiserweight title if it's, you know, not going to strictly be used for cruiserweights? If it's going to be used like a almost like European championship level title, I guess, like a third tier title for the men. Why not have Bron Breakker be the first person to have it? Give it a little bit of some prestige, because clearly he's the one that they're pushing right now. I don't feel like he's ready for the NXT title. He's not ready for the Tommaso Ciampa yet, as far as I'm concerned. I don't think he's ready to go up there and be the NXT champ. So first, give him the title reign as this whatever the new championship's going to be. Give him a title reign as that. Put some eyeballs on the rebranded 205 Live with this rebranded title with Bron Breakker. And, you know, he doesn't have to have like a super long reign with it. You can pass it off to somebody else so he can then go on to Tommaso. But I don't think that would be a bad way to kick off a second show for the NXT brand. Does that sound like it makes any sense, Tom, or am I just, you know, talking like a crazy person?
Maybe not entirely crazy. I guess when it comes to 205 being rebranded, assuming that is, I mean, they had Gacy say it for a reason, so I imagine it's going to happen. It's still weird referring to the show as 205, especially after I watched several. I said just one episode, but I watched several of the recent episodes today. If it says Yulisa León in the description, I'm watching it. I'm really, really high on her. Lots of promise there. I wouldn't be surprised if they just, well, okay, they brought back Main Event and they put big names on it for a few weeks before it settled back down. Maybe they'll do something, but I don't think it's with Breakker. Just because Breakker already has this title situation going on with Ciampa, and another email mentioned this as well, and I've been thinking it for a while that, you know, he sort of paid his dues is too strong of a term, but he already took the L to Ciampa. They've told the story of him clawing his way back through War Games, and now it makes sense that he would have a rematch with Ciampa. It's the storyline that we predicted coming out of War Games. And it's to a point now with him where it's much more – I don't know whether it's safe to bet on him winning the title, but it's much more of a question mark. It definitely feels like they could do it at this point, whereas previously I think the easy money was on Ciampa retaining and Breakker just getting the Ciampa rub. As far as Roderick Strong being involved, even as the whatever-it-is champion, Strong just feels like he's in the way now. And I, like, I'm sorry to say it. I'm the Diamond Mine is fine otherwise. I've always, even before the Creed brothers were there and before Ivy Nile was there, it was just weird that this was built around Roderick Strong. And it seems like Strong is only there to give people like Joe Gacy the best matches they've had yet on TV. And so it seems like putting Breakker with Strong is another, like, okay, we're still building this guy, we're still proving him, and we put him in there with Strong. There's no way we're coming out the other side without him having had an excellent match. But Strong just sort of feels like a speed bump for everybody. The Gacy feud was out of nowhere. This is out of nowhere. So there's that. I will, because it relates to a couple, I don't know if this is how Brian would want me to do it, and I will read the rest of the email later, but there is a part of Brian Alston's email that pertains to this. He said, or pertains to what Darrell was talking about. He says, since the relaunch of NXT in 2012, and he means after the game show phase, there have been 18 different NXT champions. Boy, I stopped keeping track at a certain point. I didn't realize we were at 18 yet. Or maybe, I think... Is that include That has to be including two-time, and I'll have to look at a list. Only two of them could be considered homegrown talent, Big E and Bo Dallas. The rest had good to great experience in other wrestling companies. When you think about it, it is shocking that there has not been a pure WWE wrestler that won the developmental title in 7 years. So I just figured I'd throw in that comment from Brian.
24 different NXT title reigns, so 18 champions sounds right. That
okay,
sounds
wow.
Right. Yeah, according to Wikipedia, anyway.
We do have to remember one thing, though, okay? And this is one thing that Tom and I have been preaching since the change of 2.0, and we need to remember that, one, this is just regressing back to what NXT was when they made the transition from SCW. However, maybe within 2 years of that transition, they already had the Zanes and the Nevilles and those kind of wrestlers in there that had the experience. So they quickly went from being developmental to Triple H signing all the independent wrestlers he could sign. But that spirit of developmental has always been there. Just think about some of the acts that have come through NXT, whether they succeeded or they failed. People like Lars Sullivan, right? People like The Ascension, and you just went through them on 8YB and how they really just have had squash matches throughout their whole time as tag team champions. Basically, NXT, even when you had those people, has always been a place where you are having that kind of development and growth. But to Austin's point, right, the amount of people that have that acumen coming into NXT already makes it seem like less of a developmental brand and more of a stepping stone brand, which is what a lot of people saw it as before, even when it was a distinct thing. People always talk about the next call-up, who's going to go up next, yada, yada, yada. And I think because people haven't recalibrated from that, there's still a bit of hesitancy to 2.0. But what they're doing is they are setting up a lot of these wrestlers who they signed from different places who have not had wrestling experience to eventually become those next champions. So they might go back into that wave again of finding other ready-made wrestlers who have all the independent experience. But I think they're setting themselves up right now well for the future. To Tom's point, I'm not sure. I do think Ciampa actually retains, but like Tom said, I think it's more of a question now. I do think him getting the pinfall on Sunday over Ciampa in the War Games match could be the make good for him to put over Ciampa again in a good match for whenever their championship match happens. It's the rubber match. I don't think anyone really loses anything. But I don't know if there's anyone else to be champion from 2.0 to take it off Ciampa right now, unless Ciampa's going to be champion for basically another 6 to 8 months at least. And to your point, Nate, the only one, you're assuming that the title is still around after the comments tonight, because they easily could just use the comments tonight to write off the title and not show it again. But if the title is brought back, the only reason I want Breaker to win it is if he immediately challenges in a belt versus belt match with Ciampa, and then that could be the way to get rid of the title. I don't think NXT needs another men's title right now, unless it becomes a television title that is defended every week or every other week, something like that. I think having one less title will help streamline the story writing process a little bit.
I could get down with the TV title, because I'm right there with you. I don't think they need another title whatsoever. And I was even thinking, while you guys are talking, I was actually thinking about doing something like the title versus title and having them unify it or something like that. But I'm actually kind of hoping they go with the TV title, because NXT kind of has a history of going with WCW ideas, NWA ideas, and WWF never had a TV title, as far as I'm aware anyway. They never had a TV title. And WCW did. They had the North American title. They did War Games. There's a lot of Bash of the Beach. There's a lot of those WCW ties. So I think that'd actually be kind of cool to have a TV title that's defended every week. I don't know. And then now that I'm thinking about that, I'm like, well, then that's another title that's defended every week. I don't know.
It would give Breaker ring time every week to improve and to build dominance and to just build more character and get more of the psychology down. So it could work if they do it that way. But if they came to me and asked me for my opinion and said, we're going to do what you say, which would never happen, I'd say scrap the title. Don't need it. Go from there.
Yeah, that should be what the North American title's for. Like, you don't necessarily have to have it on TV every week, but, like, the North American title should be that workhorse title, I think. Like, it should be, you know, that intercontinental title. Like, that's at least that's where I'm coming from anyway, where I'm coming from. All right, so let us go back to – so I think what we're going to do, actually, is we're going to do something a little bit different. A couple of the emails here are directly – kind of directly towards Tom. So I'm going to just have Tom read the mailbag tonight. I'm going to just kick back for a little bit. I'm going to let Tom do some reading. We'll respond to some emails, and we'll go from there afterwards, and we'll touch on the things that we haven't talked about. But Tom, take it away.
Okay, sounds good. And like I said earlier, if you guys feel really strongly about some of the stuff, go ahead and jump in. But there's some real meat here. I'm going to go ahead and start with Dr. Catani because I have not – he even says, pardon my delay. That's why I haven't read it yet. So let's see what Dr. Catani says. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. After a solid War Games, I'm excited for the direction of NXT. My main question is, what do you make of Boa? I personally think the Supernatural gig needs to go because he's insanely talented without it. What do you all think? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. The Professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. Thank you. I agree about Boa. I'm especially excited for the direction of NXT after War Games. I think War Games was just such an excellent showcase. You know, yeah, you've got the Joe Gacy stuff. But for the most part, it was an excellent showcase for the newer generation of NXT. And I feel like my overall takeaway from tonight's episode is that if from the rebrand or the refresh or the reversion or whatever you want to say, from when the color scheme changed to War Games was the rookies and pros and everybody was paired off. And then War Games was the proving ground. Tonight felt like, and it's only one episode in, to the post-War Games world, but tonight felt like first steps toward the newer acts spreading their wings more and not necessarily having to be attached to the established acts. And yeah, just 100% agreed on Boa. He's really talented and doesn't need the Supernatural stuff. You guys jump in if you want as I pick another email.
My only thing on Boa is that he always looks like he's really constipated when he's fighting through the evil force that's trying to go through him.
Yeah.
That's about all I have to say on Boa.
Yeah, like, so there's that. I wasn't going to bring that up, but since you did, yeah, that needs to stop. If Karen Q, if Mei Ying is not going to be a thing anymore, if Tian Sha, all of the time and investment and all of those cool freaking cartoons and everything that they put in for Tian Sha, for them to just really never do anything. If that's not a thing anymore, yeah, drop it. Just drop it. And, you know, be a badass like ninja. Be a badass ninja. Like, don't be like, oh, God, what's his name?
Tozawa.
Yeah, Tozawa. Thank you. Don't be like Tozawa. Don't be Tozawa. Be like an actual sweet ninja.
Well, speaking of Karen Q, didn't she pop up in that backstage segment with Jensen and Briggs and Jacket Time at the very end of her PJ drinking a Slurpee and then sitting right back down? That was her, right?
I was wondering, what the hell was up with that?
I don't know.
That
segment confused me.
I thought Sling TV, like, screwed me or something and I was missing a few frames or something like that because, like, all of a sudden she was just there. That was weird. We're not even talking about that right now, but, like, that – I even wrote down in my notes, what the F? And I didn't write F. I finished it with the UCK.
Well, what the beyond H? That, why are Catanzaro and Carter so interested in Briggs and Jensen?
It seemed like they were just walking through to say their lies.
Yeah, I was going
to
say it seemed like the other way around.
Took the bait.
I'd take the bait.
How did I get this? I get Briggs and Jensen's presentation. I just don't think it's good.
No, me either.
Yeah, sorry, the segment was pretty No. The segment was pretty terrible, and it's one less that we have to talk about later. I think this is the third time we've seen Karen Q with the sleep mask and the pajamas, but we'll see what happens.
Unless you're a narcoleptic wrestler, I don't know where this is going.
Right, exactly. okay, Paul Robinson follows up on something that we said, I believe, on Wrestling Night in America after War Games. I apologize. We're so in the habit of saying the full name on here, but the Torch standard is to just say the first name. So I apologize, Paul in Staffordshire. Hi, guys. Have just watched War Games and thought it was pretty good considering the number of, quote, rookies in the main events. I just wanted to mention that when Kelly mentioned he had mentioned the bad acting of putting your hands on your head to signify shock, it took me back to when I had Danny Baker's own Goals and Gaffes, VHS, a collection of football clips. He starts one section by talking about when he did drama at school and was asked to act shocked. He put his hands on his head, then was told, like you said, that it was cliche and no one actually does that in real life. Of course, he then showed a series of clips of players scoring on their own goals and making terrible back passes, after which, of course, they stood there with their hands on their head. Happy memories. Keep up the good work, Paul in Staffordshire.
I was going to call Kelly out on that last week, because there have definitely been times in my life where I have been shocked as all hell and my hands go straight to my head. But I thought maybe because it's bald and it's like, you know, a texture thing.
This could be a chicken or the egg situation. Maybe we do that because we saw it happen in bad acting so much that we now do that as a natural reaction to things. You know, so there could be that.
You know, okay.
What? I'm going to leave this email unread, so hopefully Kelly sees it when he's back to the show.
In Home Alone. That's all it reminds me of.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, it took me so long to understand that joke because I didn't know what aftershave was at the time that movie came out. There's so many things like that. My daughter recently watched, she's been enjoying Little Shop of Horrors, and there's this whole scene where Bill Murray goes in to see Steve Martin, whose dentist character uses really painful practices. And Bill Murray wants to go to him because he gets off on it, and he's all excited. As a kid watching that movie, I had no idea. I was just like, well, this person is certainly goofy. but anyway, I was more on the Kelly side of this until I saw a clip back from my recent appearance on the Blake and Sal show where I'm talking about Joe Gacy, and I put my hands on my head because I didn't know what the hell to say about the guy. So I was like, oh, well, there I am doing it. Okay, mark as unread. Okay, I'm going to hit Brian Alston's. Brian from Phoenix, 30-year Torch senior VIP subscriber. Hello, friends. Great show on Sunday night recapping NXT. Don't call it TakeOver, War Games. However, I am disappointed that Blog Talk crashed during my call. We found out afterwards from Craig that thankfully we're not the only show that happens to. I was worried it was just an us thing and we were doing something wrong, but it is a Blog Talk thing.
What? I never do anything wrong.
I mentioned on Sunday that today's show really isn't NXT 2.0. It's actually 4.0. How I see it, 1.0 is the beginning, the game show era. 2.0 is the relaunch as a weekly episodic wrestling program, in the Full Sail arena. 3.0, December 2014, TakeOver R Evolution. Kevin Owens, Finn Balor, and Hideo Itami had their first matches. This signaled the start of NXT being more of bringing in independent talent rather than growing new wrestlers. 4.0 is when 2.0 started. Reminder to go VIP so you can listen to NXT 8 years back, where we talk about wrestling for 40 minutes and movie trivia for 20 minutes, unless there's a subject that Tom can chew on. Those episodes go almost 90 minutes. That is true. Okay, so I would personally break up what you've got as 3.0 into more or less the era you have, the TakeOver era, and the era when they were going up against AEW, because the mentality changed even more then. But of course, you know, the 2.0 name is just what they went with. It doesn't have to make sense. It's just a branding thing. It's like MLW Fusion, Monday Night, you know, WWE Raw. NXT didn't have a name for a long time, and now it's NXT 2.0. At least that's how I'm seeing it. I know I said at the first episode that I think the 2.0 will go by the wayside after a while. I'm less sure of that now, like 2 months into it or however long, but yeah, I mostly agree with what you said there.
Know when we originally started talking about, like, it's really not 2.0, it's like I kind of broke it up exactly like you did. So I was kind of thinking 5.0 at this point. I kind of broke it up exactly the same way in my head, you know, kind of same way that he broke it up here. You have the original game show era, then the weekly episodic era, then the takeover era, the up against AEW era, or we could call it the Nate era, because I started exactly the week that they first went up against AEW. And then of course now. So yeah, five. That's kind of where I was breaking it up.
Things a little more, but I think, was it about end of 2015 to maybe 2017? The women's division of NXT was the reason we watched the show. I mean, I think that itself is its own point of whatever. Because, like, I think of basically Asuka's reign through the end of Shayna Baszler's second reign at a time when the women's division could do no. Like, that was the best division in all of professional wrestling, outside of maybe like the New Japan heavyweights, right? And I think those maybe 2 years are probably, I have to go back and look at the date specifically, but I think if we take a marker and say Asuka's reign to the end of Baszler's second reign, I think that's probably maybe just the end of Baszler's first reign. I need to go back and look, but I think that deserves a moment for itself as well.
I love me some Kairi, and the Rhea build was really good. But yeah. The end of Shayna's second reign, the only time I've ever gotten to touch a wrestling ring. And yeah, I was in there with like 50 other people, but but it was memorable. Oh, and of course,
the days before COVID.
Yeah, exactly. I look back now and I'm like, oh, God, why?
Especially in Florida.
Exactly. I remember trying to slide in under the bottom rope, and a staffer was like, wait, no, use the stairs. But I was already.
No, dude, I know what I'm doing.
I didn't, my jacket got caught. I tried
doing that once. Yeah, it's bad.
Sean in Texas says, evening, gentlemen. And I believe I've scanned this. I think he's hitting a lot of points here. I kept on wanting to work this in at other points of the podcast, but we'll see what we got here. Wanted to start off by saying that NXT / upper management, whoever runs the place, just needs to stop piping in booze already. It was so blatantly obvious during the Wagner-O'Reilly match that I wanted to mute the TV. Now I kind of want to go back and listen to that, because I was mostly hearing the you still suck chants, and that definitely wouldn't have been piped in.
It kind of ties into his next point here, but I don't know if you noticed, okay, when Braun Breaker came out, they piped in the hairdryer pop, and it was so blatantly obvious. You've got an arena full of people cheering, and then you've got like 100 people on TV in front of you. It was like, it was the worst piped in audio I've heard since we've been out of the Thunderdome, not Thunderdome, CWC.
And I think me not noticing that goes to show just how used to those sorts of things you can become, or at least speaking for myself, how used to it I can become. Cause I remember I was so revolted by the sounds of Madison Square Garden, or what sounded like MSG, during the Edge Orton match in the Performance Center. I thought that was awful, and now I guess I'm just used to it. But okay, so Sean continues. Now on to Braun Breaker. He is more and more like Scott Steiner on the mic every week. I'm slowly starting to like him more and more. He's definitely got the look and is getting better in the ring week by week. I can really see him beating Ciampa for the belt. If NXT can book him right, he'll be good. Speaking of said gold, and with contracts coming up with the older NXT 1.0 wrestlers, can y'all see most, if not all of them, slowly fading away, whether moving up to the main roster, more releases, or letting contracts expire? To me, I feel like early in the new year, it'll essentially be NXT 2.0 superstars from there on out. What's y'all's thoughts on that? sending this in right as Grayson Waller put Gargano through a table. So this either confirms more or less Johnny is staying in NXT but will be off TV for a while, or that this was all she wrote and he's gone. We shall see. Anyways, y'all have a great night. Thanks for that. Thanks for all that y'all do each and every week, and take care. Sent from my iPhone. I was like, should I put that part?
For my iPhone, give it back. It's my work phone, man.
I actually kind of had that thought. That relates to what I said about feeling like this episode was the 2.0 acts, or as I've been trying to force myself to say, the newer acts, because not all of them were only introduced after the refresh. But it's them spreading their wings some more. And I think this goes, Bruce, you can agree or disagree, or make your own points. But I think this ties into what you and I have been talking about with how this is a reversion to how the original Full Sail NXT was. And you'd have Cesaro working so regularly on NXT that he's even included in the opening the opening sequence, showing off all the stars that are on the show. Mm-hmm. Or you'd have Damian Sandow come in, or you'd have Alicia Fox and Natalya, and all of these people coming down to work with the up-and-comers. It's just that in this case, those people who are working with the up-and-comers are people who we already were watching on NXT. And they, by design of this brand, they will end up phasing out over time, whether, through any of these means that Sean is presenting. So I don't know if it's going to happen on the accelerated scale that he's envisioning, because realistically, we're only like 3 weeks away from what he said early in the new year, so that could be, months away. What do you think, Bruce?
Yes, you and I have from the beginning of the change been just like, yo, it's back to them. It's being what it was in the beginning. It's developmental. It's fine. And let's not forget, who did Seth Rollins beat in the finals of the first NXT Championship tournament to win the title? Jinder Mahal. Like, he, not to say he was, a great wrestler, but that's another one of those veterans that was down there. The two avenues that he didn't mention in his email is, they could become managers, or I think some of them, like especially Ciampa, because of his health, I think he could become a producer pretty easily in NXT, just transition very easily into that role after he's, if he decides to be done. He's had so many injuries, especially to his neck and spine, that I don't know how much more he would like to risk it. And then, knowing his reputation there, he's definitely someone I would look at as them really wanting to keep around as a producer, as a coach or a trainer for NXT moving forward. Could you remind me more about what you were saying, Tom? I got lost in thought.
Just the idea that we are in a new time. Oh, you got it. Yeah.
Right. So again, it depends on what you mean by new. Sometimes what's old is new and developmental.
Right, yes, exactly.
So going to Bron Breakker real quick. The one quibble I have with him, and that I noted tonight that I would really, if I was training him, I would hone in on, is he starts every promo at an 8 minimum. And when you're at an 8 or a 9 or a 10, you don't have much room to build up to a 10. And it would help his character development and the depth of his presentation for him to be able to not have to yell from the very beginning of his promos like Dolph Ziggler, like Cedric Alexander, and build up to those moments. Because at least for me, when I just hear someone yelling like that, it starts grating on me and I get annoyed. Like, Nas is a great rapper, one of the best of all time. I can only listen to so much Nas because I feel like he's always yelling at me. You know what I'm saying? So if Bron Breakker could just tone it down a bit, start at a 5 or a 6 and not an 8 or a 9, I think then for sure right now he's already set to be NXT champion, but if he can get those promos down, he is going to be running Raw and SmackDown for the next decade.
I would agree with you, but I almost like the fact that he starts out each just like his uncle, just like his dad. Gets out
if his
there,
voice cuts, wasn't so nasally and so like annoying, then it wouldn't be as bad. But
I
think he needs to show more depth, man.
No, I hear you. I don't know, but I think there's a lot of people, like, and I know I'm one of them, they latch on to, like, that Steiner nostalgia anyway. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think it's working for him. Like, he comes out tonight, and, you know, just the first thing out of his mouth, he grabs the mic, Tommaso Ciampa! And I'm just like, dude, this is great. I felt like it was exactly like watching, you know, like Scott Steiner or Rick Steiner or something. And I like that. I think, and I think there's people that may latch onto it, but at the same time, I definitely am not trying to like discredit or disagree with you whatsoever. But I think with anybody else, I would be like 100% with you. But I think if he stays that course right now, like, I think it'll work for him simply because of who he is.
I think the more apt comparison is not Roman Reigns for Braun Breaker. It's Brock Lesnar. They give promos the exact same way.
Yeah.
And they also have the amateur wrestling style background. So,
he moves a lot more like Lesnar in the ring. Like, I actually see a lot of Lesnar, like, in his wrestling style. Absolutely.
And if you think about Lesnar when he first came up in 2003, his promos were him always yelling. But, I mean, he has developed more, but it took, you know, basically 2 decades. And having a manager call him in basically the whole time. But I think that should be the comparison we make and not Roman Reigns.
I don't know if I can even put my finger on a Brock Lesnar promo from, like, way back then. I have to look one up. But
I just remember him always yelling at Paul to interrupt when he wanted to say something.
Yeah,
like, shut up, Paul. That's all he would say. And like, yeah.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
That's okay. Yeah. I do remember stuff like that. Yeah.
Okay, Nate. Do you want me to do the next two now, or do you want to talk about some matches and segments that we haven't hit yet?
Oh, you know what? Let's just keep going. Let's keep rolling with the emails,
okay.
And then we'll get into the other stuff.
Took a big swig of water. I think I read over these. I think I'm going to respond a little bit to the first one, but mostly just read it to provide the perspective, and then I'll respond to the second one as I go through it. This, you know, people who have been listening know that I'm currently rewatching early seasons of SNL. This very much feels like the moment in Weekend Update where you say, you know, we here at Weekend Update understand our journalistic responsibility to present editorial opinions to, you know, so on and so forth, the Emily Littell a bit. But, okay, so Hitain sends in a message titled, My Gradual Withdrawal from NXT. Hi, folks. I don't believe in strawmanning to make a point. WWE and AEW cultists both do plenty of it. Instead, I will try to steelman the I love a developmental show argument and then present my case for feeling apathetic about NXT. I will also do my best not to compare companies and to just analyze NXT on its own merits. I very much appreciate that second point. I try to do the same. Sometimes it is difficult. I very much appreciate you calling. I'm just going to interpret this as you calling me out for strawmanning, because I know how it comes off when I do go down that path. And I do think it comes out like that. So I understand that. And I'll just say that anything that I have said on the show regarding what I feel are unfair 2.0 critiques or, AEW devotee mentalities, it's all in response to specific things I've seen either on social media during the shows that we're covering or on podcasts, some on the Torch, some not, that cover the shows that we are also talking about. So there are specific things that I, yes, am not mentioning. But that's anyway, I think that is fair, Hitain, so I hear you. Hitain continues. I can understand wanting to see people's journeys. With Vince McMahon in charge of NXT, there will be less dissonance between NXT and the main roster now. Gone are the days of investing in characters only to see bad gimmick changes once they get to the main roster. Instead, that's still to be seen. We're hearing you out. Instead, we get a truer sampling of what we will see on the main roster, so we can more wisely invest our emotional capital into wrestlers who we believe have a shot. We don't have to live in a perpetual worry of what will Vince think, because we get to see exactly what he thinks. It's similar to how some people love the struggle of low-level D&D and get bored quickly at middle to high-level D&D. I should also add that the current NXT doesn't really feel as micromanaged as the main roster. The talent still has a bit of freedom to do their thing. Even if I grant all that, my problem is with Vince McMahon's general vision to be consistently dissonant with what a vocal, money-paying segment of fans have wanted. I don't want to hear, oh, the same people who say X support Y, because it is impossible for an armchair fan to track people in mass like that. I can only speak for myself, and what I can say is NXT was an escape from that for some fans. I love and am used to WWE's pizzazz and presentation, but feel constantly jaded by the increasingly antiseptic creative structure over the last decade, with exceptions, of course. I found safety in a product that gave me the best of both worlds and struck a decent middle ground. It even improved upon some of the BS we saw in the Attitude Era. I do not mind watching novice talent find their feet, but I do mind novice talent finding their feet under the vision of a man who, yes, has given us some great moments, but hasn't seen a racist or sexist prejudice he didn't love, and who, by his own admission, doesn't care much for week-to-week story consistency or to give his undercard a modicum of dignity. And if you think the cultural appropriation is a product of a bygone era, I can write you a whole other email from a POC perspective explaining why I disagree and actually find AEW better in some respects regarding this. Anyway, that is who sets the vision of NXT now, and it is depressing irrespective of whether it is a true developmental show or a third brand. It is depressing to think that while Bron Breakker rightfully rises, over 75% of the other talent won't even get sustained dignity irrespective of their actual talent. The mid-card just won't end up mattering enough for me to invest 2 hours a week on this show. Case to move back to 1 hour? And with increasing VKM involvement, I don't have as much faith in week-to-week story consistency. I'm not discouraging anyone from watching 2.0. Even I can get myself to enjoy a show if I just take it for what it is and don't look forward to the future. I can get myself to enjoy the product. However, whenever I try to emotionally invest in a Vince McMahon product now, I feel like I am walking back to a mercurial friendship with high highs but lots of terrible toxic lows with tons of gaslighting. Sorry for the long email, but just thought I'd present my case. Best, Hitane. Yeah, I appreciate you laying that all out, Hitane. And hopefully when I present my perspective as well, it comes off – hopefully it is just that and not coming off as I am trying to convince people that they should like NXT, because I also can only speak from my own perspective. This then goes into – well, they're separate emails, but I think related – is JB from Detroit with his email is titled In-Depth AEW Rebuttal. So responding to mostly what I said on Wrestling Night in America about AEW and my criticisms of it. Hi, team. JB from Detroit. My first point isn't really related to NXT and is mostly directed toward Tom. I also apologize for the length of this email. Tom, I love you, but I really do have a bone to pick with you about your AEW takes over the last few weeks. I know this has already been talked to death, but I have to address a few unfair points. I want to make it clear that while AEW is currently my favorite program, I still do enjoy aspects of NXT and other WWE programming. As I previously said, Tom, I generally respect your opinions on wrestling, but I think it's undeniable that you have an inherent bias against AEW in certain respects. I said I was going to sort of respond to this one as I went along. I hope it doesn't. Obviously, it is coming off that way, but I hope, I don't know. I of course, it's easy for me to say that I don't think that I do. I really don't think it's a choice, as you even suggest, JB, I don't think it's a choice between AEW and NXT, and the choice between them is an illusion created by the fact that they were used as competition for each other by the respective companies. Yeah, I just I feel that I was fair to AEW for quite a while. I loved Dustin versus Cody on their first show, and they failed to bring me in for a lot of reasons. I kept on peeking in as needed when Greg wanted me for Wrestling Night in America and things like that. And there are even times, especially, was it the Winter is Coming show or was it the show leading up to Winter is Coming? I think it was the go home for Winter is Coming, where I was like, you know what, there's actually some stuff on this that I liked, because I was trying to view it objectively. So I feel I've been fair for what it's worth, so I don't think it's a bias. But That's how it's coming off, so that is how we are proceeding through the email. Point number one from JB. You talk about Tony Khan as if he is a trust fund child spending his father's money willy-nilly, as if Vince McMahon is some self-made billionaire genius who has been an innovator of storytelling post-2005. Vince quite literally inherited his father's company, which was at the time the biggest U.S.-based wrestling promotion in one of the biggest media markets in the world. I think the argument can be made that Vince had an easier entry into wrestling compared to Khan. Similar to AEW and NXT being compared to one another, I also I feel like it's a Wade Keller question to ask. Like, is it fair to judge Tony Khan just based on the comparison point to Vince McMahon? It's easy to, and it's relevant to. I don't think that's the only way you can compare them. I think regarding this specific point, it always drives me crazy when people who were born with advantages and already knew somebody or have billions of dollars that they can just waste away as they want. It always drives me crazy when that's the way the world is built, because of course it is that they're the ones who succeed. I was just watching something about an actor I admire recently, an interview with them. And they mentioned, oh, yeah, when I was getting started, I got my foot in the door thanks to my uncle. And they mentioned another famous actor who had been on a TV show. And I'm like, oh, if that's how you got your start, God damn it. Like, so that drives me nuts. I think, and I'm not totally in love with this comparison, because there are other examples that you could take that wouldn't pan out these exact ways. But the first people I thought of to make the comparison point was Sofia Coppola, who is in the film business and was basically going to succeed anyway, because, you know, she was born to one of the greatest American filmmakers. And she grew up in the film industry. And so that is why she's doing it. And that's the Vince McMahon. And I can respect that more than someone like an Uwe Boll, who just likes movies and decided that because he has a bunch of money, he's going to make movies too. And he doesn't do a very good job of it. And that's the Tony Khan. And again, there are different examples that you could go with. There's, I forgot to remind myself what the name of the movie is. There was a silent film that was made past the silent era in the early 1930s by, I think, an Argentinian guy. And he only did it because he was rich and he wanted to. And then he never made anything else. And I don't particularly care for the film, but it is widely revered. So, you know, take that as you will, I guess.
There is
second point. Oh, yeah.
Sorry, there is one other thing that I want to point out. One thing that JB says here is, you know, Vince quite literally inherited his father's company, which was at the time, you know, and he goes on to talk about WWF at the time. Vince didn't inherit the company from his father. He founded Titan Sports, and then Titan Sports purchased the company from his father, Monsoon and Skolin,
I believe. That he and his dad had a bad relationship.
Yeah, they had a very bad relationship, yeah. And I believe it was a pretty reluctant purchase. He kind of like talked them into it. I forget the history behind it, but it was an inheritance. It wasn't like he was just handed the company. He worked for it, and he did found Titan Sports with Linda, and then they eventually purchased WWE. Well, what became WWE. Yeah. But
and that does indicate that, you know, he did have advantages growing up because of his dad. It's just at the time of purchase and all that, it wasn't an inheritance. So,
yeah, I appreciate you guys clarifying that. When I read it, I was like, I think that's an oversimplification, but I couldn't remember exactly what it was. So thank you for that. I think another thing for me is just that, you know, Tony is working in the mold of, you know, an Eric Bischoff or a Vince McMahon, whereas Vince really did stuff with – Vince completely remolded the wrestling world. And I know that rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, but he changed what professional wrestling was, while Tony Khan, by my estimation, is trying to revert it back to a place when there were a lot of problems that we – This actually bleeds into the second point. Point number two from JB. You talk about being disillusioned with AEW because of their penchant. Sorry, that's I always think of their penchant for allowing dangerous and unsafe wrestling throughout their history. While I can't argue with that entirely, as Kelly said on Sunday, they've certainly improved here and there. Where here, and there were some missteps early on, as is to be expected with any new company. That's where I'm going to jump in, because no. I'm literally wagging my finger here. Maybe that finger wag is too combative, and I don't mean it that way. But no, these lessons were already learned. The wrestling world has already learned these lessons. We've seen a lot of early deaths. I don't want to see any more early deaths. I know that sounds dramatic, but I don't want to see Matt Hardy and Daniel Bryan, shorten their careers any further, with this kind of stuff. These are lessons that have already been learned. Just because they weren't learned by AEW, the company, doesn't mean they should be relearned by a lot of the people who are still involved, the wrestlers, and they have the WWE doctor who was there for a lot of that, is the head doctor, or, I don't know, he's there. JB continues, however, let us not forget that WWE kept employing Nia Jax for many years, despite her well-established reputation for being an unsafe wrestler and on many occasions hurting or injuring her opponents. In fact, the only reason she was recently released is because, allegedly, she is unvaccinated. I think the argument can be made that Jax has a longer and more established reputation of being a dangerous wrestler compared to anyone on AEW's roster. And my counterpoint to that is that I have, since a lot of this is talking about my perspective on things, I have been very critical of Nia Jax's work in the past, so that hasn't gone excused by me. Also, she's just one person on a roster, whereas what I have seen, and I always have to say this when I talk about AEW, it has to be taken with a grain of salt, because I was not watching the product regularly, but every time I tuned in and every time, and I still listen to recaps, I always kept up with it because I felt a responsibility to, and I feel a responsibility to, I wasn't watching every single week, but I was seeing and I was hearing things and tracking it to that extent, not as closely as others, but to that extent. And I finally reached a point now where I absolutely refuse to watch it. Yeah, so that's where I'm at now. But so that grain of salt taken, what I have seen from them is an overall mentality, not just an individual wrestler who I don't know if the unvaccinated thing is true or not. I saw the same reports that everybody else saw, but that would be her getting released because she's being unsafe. So she did finally get released for being unsafe, even if it wasn't only for her work in a wrestling ring. So there's that. But that's one wrestler, while AEW's mentality overall is just go out there and do a bunch of stuff that doesn't mean anything because it's just I don't like the joke. On an indie show, it's different. The context is different. But on a big major wrestling promotion with national TV, the joke style, the Cirque du Soleil style, the storytelling light, and I know a lot of that is opinion-based and other people like what they see from people like the Young Bucks and Kenny Omega and everything. I can't stand that crap. But when you're going out there on just a weekly TV show and you're doing moves and you are put in the mentality is such in the company where you can just go out there and do moves where you can break your neck very easily just on a weekly TV. That's not wrestling to me. That's a dangerous stunt show. Wrestling is understanding how to protect yourself so you can make money the next night and not shortening your career. And when you've got, I mean, I still haven't forgiven that Matt Hardy thing. And that's, everybody knows what I'm talking about when I say the Hardy thing. And, JB says that just like Kelly said that they've improved here and there and there were some missteps early on. Well, when I listen to Wade's hotline and he's saying that Cody is still blading and taking chair shots to the head, they clearly haven't improved all that much. And even if they've had a recent track record of just like a few weeks or a few months of nobody breaking their neck, I mean, that's a fraction of their run so far. So
let me also add something real quick.
Yes.
To the Nia Jax, I'm going to come off as a WWE defender here, and I when I make comparisons between the shows, it's because I think there are things that both are doing that the other could either use as an example or not an example of. So I want to make that clear. But also, the Nia Jax thing, and JB and I have gone back and forth on this before. Amongst the fans, she has a reputation. But from Wade's reporting that I listened to on the hotline, she did not have that reputation amongst her fellow wrestlers, the ones that actually worked with her in the ring and, yes, may have been injured by her. I remember in 2015 when Seth Rollins was injuring people left and right in the ring, including that knee he gave to Cena that broke his nose?
Yep.
Where were those – I mean, we talked about it and whatnot, but, you know, I think there's a lot of underlying racism and sexism that comes into play with Nia Jax and people's perception of her, and also nepotism because of her connections, which you were talking about earlier, Tom. You hate nepotism. We all hate nepotism except when it actually works for us, right? So so for me, the Nia Jax thing is overblown. But, and I think what you're saying is correct. That's one person that everyone turns to. But that's one person in an organization with, what, hundreds of wrestlers? And the thing is, it's only with her. Even though we just had War Games on Sunday, right, we're not talking about those matches as being dangerous, even though Cora Jade, yeah, she could have definitely hurt herself on that fall. It looks like she did. We're not saying that, oh, my gosh, the thing coming out of the show isn't the crazy bump that Darby Allin took, or the amount of blood that Cody had on his face, or the fact that the flame retardant didn't work on his back and he went through a flaming table. We're not talking about those kind of things with War Games, right? We're talking about the stories coming out of the show. So while there have been improvements, I do think Tom's point about this being a macro issue versus a micro issue with Nia Jax valid, and I think needs to be considered more. And the other thing with AEW, and you kind of touched on this too, Tom, is that a lot of the people who are involved in these dangerous spots and stunts and, you know, places where they get injured are people who have been there and done it before. It's not the inexperienced folk that we had concerns about going into Sunday. It's the veterans who have been there for 15, 20 years doing this night in and night out. And they're still the ones who are, you know, putting their lives on the line, basically. I like New Japan as well, but they just announced Shibata's back, Katsuyori Shibata, and I still hear the headbutt in my head from what forced him to retire in the first place, right? That, to me, is unnecessary. I understand the appeal, but I think, and again, I consume AEW. I listen to the reports. I read the reports. I listen to the shows. You know, I watch their shows. I've been on AEW pods on this for the Torch, too. There are good things, too, but I think this aspect is not one of those places that AEW fans need to turn to, because I think if you're going about in terms of overall danger and overall risk, WWE by far mitigates as much of the risk as possible, sometimes to their detriment in terms of match quality. But as Tom said, the goal is to make it to the next day to make more money. WWE is doing a better job of that. And to his other, and to the previous email about, you know, racial stereotypes and caricatures coming from me as someone who's Asian, all right? There has been a lot of improvement on WWE's end as well. And we're going back to, you know, AEW having improvement. But I do think AEW is better here, because in AEW, you are rarely going to find someone who's of color, who's a woman or a different gender, et cetera, that is a stereotype or a caricature. Whereas in WWE, as much as the Hurt Business was great, right? And as you know, the New Day is now a caricature of themselves, but you have Bianca Belair and Sasha Banks. There's still Akira Tozawa, right? Seen as a stupid ninja. So I think that, yes, they're coming for you a bit, Tom, but I do think that in general, neither company is faultless, and they both have much room to improve on. I just don't think the comparisons that are being made should be the comparisons that are being made in terms of where each is better or can improve on. If that, I'm not sure if all that made any coherent sense to you two, but I think that needs to be said, and people need to just step back and recalibrate a little bit.
Definitely made a lot of sense to me. The one more thing I'll add on the work, the ring work stuff, is just that even when, and I think this goes along with your point, even when more dangerous spots like what Cora Jade did at War Games are performed in WWE, it's in a more controlled situation. Clearly the focus was there and everybody was in position where it's a lot more frenetic. And again, I don't know, point made. I was going to make the indie wrestling comparison again, but point made. Yes, so I think what you're talking about with sexism and racism and things like that. And yeah, I mean, we're still seeing that with Tozawa. We're still seeing that with, I mean, we're starting to see that now with Aika Manjiro and Kushida, unfortunately. And we mentioned that last week, and they were involved in that awful backstage promo or segment that we talked about before launching into the mailbag, I don't know, whenever we talked about it. So that is JB's next point. And this, you know, maybe this is because I have not been following the product. Again, I'm listening to the recaps, and I don't hear names like Scorpio Sky, somebody who I did like on the indies, and I'm just like, why is he not? Okay, so JB says, you mentioned AEW being some vanilla white guy promotion, and I know I didn't use the word vanilla, but I wish I did. if it sounded like I did, then fantastic. In reality, that is far from the case. The current AEW tag champions are of Hispanic heritage, and the current TNT champion is of Cuban descent. Meanwhile, minority wrestlers like Jade Cargill, Thunder Rosa, Scorpio Sky, Dante Martin, Sheeta, Andrade, and Powerhouse Hobbs are being strongly pushed. There have only been 4 AEW champions in history to this point. If it isn't time for a minority champion, then it shouldn't be forced for the sake of it, as that would be a disservice to everyone involved. Let us not forget that there have only been like 3 or 4 African-American number one heavyweight champions in modern WWE history. Bruce, take it away.
Good. Thank you. Okay, so I understand the point about not forcing it, but this is where my big qualm with AEW comes in. Rich Fan asked Tony Khan in the summer of 2019, when are we going to see more black men in the main event and world title picture? He said by the end of the year. There was one main event match on Dynamite that year that featured a black man, and that was Scorpio Sky against Chris Jericho for the world title. That was it. It took until March of the next year in 2020 for Santana to have his main event match with John Moxley for the world title, and that was empty arena because of the pandemic. So my issue is that they have – it's not about forcing. They're the ones who said you would see this happen, and it hasn't happened. Okay, regardless of how many champions there have been, how many black men have been in these main events and have had world title shots? It has been Scorpio Sky, and I think that's it. Okay, that's my issue. Now, when I said about the representation and the presentation, they've been doing great with the women and with tag teams, etc. But in the biggest money-making division in professional wrestling that has been always throughout history, based on the words that they said, okay, remember when they debuted, it was all about diversity, it's all about pushing all this good stuff. They said to Rich's face, end of 2019, you will see it happen. Multiple. He said you would see more men. Happened once. Okay. We still haven't seen that improve. That doesn't necessarily discount the women's division, like Jade Cargill, Red Velvet, pretty much everyone not named Brandi Rhodes is doing great there. The tag division, Lucha Bros are a great tag team. I do have quibbles with how little they abide by tag team rules, but you know, they're fantastic. It's just when I try to hold people to their word as I hold myself to my word. And I understand that corporations, you shouldn't believe that, but this came from the word of someone's mouth who's supposed to be running the corporation, okay, directly to someone at the torch. Because of that, and it still hasn't improved, it's great to see Powerhouse Hobbs and Ricky Starks and Sammy Guevara and whoever else that is being pushed, right? But the fact of the matter is, they only started getting main, and I even said this when the TNT title was introduced. That's where they're going to put the black men in the main event slots in Dynamite, is when they're challenging for the TNT title, or they might be TNT champion, but they're not going to be in the world title shot or the world title picture, and that's still the case. So, to your point, JB, outside of the singles division, in the men's singles division, the heavyweight division especially, in terms of the world title picture, they're doing fine. That one place, that is, they're not doing well, and the one place they said they would improve, and they still have yet to improve, and it's 2 years later now.
Yeah, all right. I guess I'm just glad to hear that the women's division seems to be getting a bit more focused now. That doesn't seem to be translating into the recaps that I'm hearing, but maybe I mean, that's just an effect of me not actually watching the shows. Okay, so JB's fourth point final point. You talk about preferring WWE because of the history and lineage of titles. One, I would argue that WWE titles have been so devalued such a long period of time now that the lineage, prestige, and luster is completely off of them. Two, by that logic, one would never be able to truly enjoy and appreciate another promotion. History has to be built. It can't appear overnight. JB, you're absolutely right. But, you know, I'm sorry it's not fair that WWE does have the lineage. I just feel like because you have a lot of money and you can say, well, I'm starting a wrestling promotion and you buy Kenny Omega and you buy CM Punk, that doesn't mean that that your title suddenly means something. They do have to develop that history. And is it possible that AEW survives and gets better at all this stuff and eventually I decide to start watching it again and I like it and I then retroactively start respecting the history of it? That is possible. I think at this point they've unfortunately proven it, from my perspective, they've proven my criticisms of them right so many times over that it seems unlikely that I would give them another shot at this point, no matter how many people try to tell me that it's gotten better. But that's just how it is. I mean, I started watching wrestling in 1998, and by that point, the history was already there, and it felt like it meant something. So then when I went back and watched old pay-per-views, it was amazing to see, like, oh, wow, so this is the title that Triple H would go on to hold, and so on and so forth. And it's still that way. Like, when Big E won the championship, it was even bigger for me, just speaking personally, and I know different people have different experiences with title changes and things like that, but it was even bigger to me because it's the same title that was held by so many other legendary names.
I've got to completely agree with you with that, because like that's part of the reason that I have had trouble getting into AEW, and one of the reasons that really drew me into WWF way back in the day. So I came into WWF probably late 97, early 98. Late 97. And it's kind of the same thing. I remember, you know, the WWF title. I'm a little kid, right? I mean, I remember seeing like Bret Hart and Stone Cold holding that title, Shawn Michaels holding that title. And that's like the biggest thing in the world to me, right? And then you start hearing on TV, you start hearing them talking about like people like Classy Freddie Blassie and, you know, and like Lou Albano and Gorilla Monsoon. You hear all these names and you keep hearing these names. And then I started, you know, going on, I had the internet. Like I was one of the first kids that I knew that had the internet back then. But I had the internet. So you start looking things up and you start like finally, like, you know, kind of diving into this history. And that is what really kind of drew me into wrestling, was in part, not the entire reason, but in part was that history and that lineage of the title. And like seeing like I remember the first time I looked at like Wikipedia or whatever, and I saw that Bruno Sammartino had a 7-year title reign. My mind was blown, right? That's never going to happen again. You know, a 7-year title reign or anything like that. But my point being is, with AEW, with it being that fledgling company, it doesn't have that history. And for me, it's really hard for me to say, okay, you know what? I work 40 hours a week. I have, I have other side projects that I work on besides the stuff I do for wrestling. I also have other interests and other hobbies and other things, right? Do I really want to take the time to watch AEW that, you know what, maybe just might fizzle out in a couple of years? And that was at least, I'm not saying it's going to fizzle out, but that's like my mentality at first, right? This is a new company. There's that history wasn't necessarily there. I think that does actually have, that argument does hold some weight. I do see what JB's saying, but I think like from, you know, at least my perspective, your perspective, Tom, I think that history and that lineage is a big, big thing and a big advantage that WWE has over AEW at this point.
I'm going to agree a bit, but also disagree. And so it's interesting that I'm younger than both of you, but I started watching wrestling before you two. I started watching in 93. And what actually drew me was the big gold belt. WCW was the first promotion I watched. And for me, that big gold belt, I think maybe because of its size,
looking at it right now, hanging on my wall.
Yeah, it had a lot of gravitas to it, right? And then eventually when I started watching WWF and I became a Bret Hart fan, I really enjoyed that ride of him getting the Winged Eagle Championship, right? One of the best championships still. But for me, I understand your point about the lineage, okay? And this is going to counter what I just said about AEW a little bit in my criticisms, but I guess not necessarily, because they could have just had Blackman in the main event picture without having them win the title. But I think what they're doing, specifically with the men's world title, and even with the women's world title, if you look at the lineage and who's held it and sort of the matches, I think what they're doing now is setting them up to have what's the word I'm looking for? Not historic, but a sort of kind of dignified lineage for the title, right? They've had four champions in 2 years. Each champion held a belt for around 6 months, I'd say, on average. I think Omega had the longest reign so far. And if you look at the women's title too, when they go for Riho, Britt Baker, they had, I think Thunder Rosa was champion. I mean, I think what they've done with these main titles is they are setting the foundation for them to have, like a better term, a historical lineage that people can look back on, and kind of how you and Nate, when you were younger, looking at the lineage of the WWE Championship at the time, I think they're setting that up. I don't think they're fledgling. Their funding, their TV contracts, their merchandise sales would indicate they're not fledgling. They're in they're at a deficit this year because of the video game, but beyond that, their contracts seem to indicate that they're not fledgling. So they probably will be here at least through the terms of their next contract, which I think is 2025, 2024, somewhere around there. I could be wrong. I'm just trying to remember the extension. But you have to start somewhere, right? You have to, even for WWF in that history, they had to go through the territory and be WWF and then absorb other territories and finally create Titan Towers and then purchase all the remaining territories to become WWF and then have that lineage associated with their title, right? So it wasn't like those champions from the 50s and 60s with that lineage are what we would have considered to be what we remember as WWF, so, or WWE. So again,
well, at least what I was talking was the WWF title, or yeah, triple WF title starting
sure,
with Bruno.
But even then, you still have to have a foundation somewhere, right? And I think in that aspect, at least, AEW is building that foundation.
Or not Bruno, Pedro Morales. Sorry, I got to correct
there
myself
you
there.
And I think the fact that they didn't absorb a company and use those titles as their titles is, how do I put this? In the short term, probably hurt because they didn't have that lineage. Like if they had somehow bought Impact and used the lineage of the Impact World title, going back to even when it was a TNA and the NWA World Heavyweight Championship, right? I guess you can't do the NWA anymore, but as a TNA World title, that probably would have had more impact because of who has held that title, like the Kurt Angles, like the Stings, the Christian Cages, the Jeff Hardys, etc. So I get your point, but I do think that, again, they have to start somewhere, and I think they are building that foundation to where maybe in 3 years we look back and say, wow, look at the lineage of champions. And, you know, the last decade in WWE has been marked with rapid title changes, so them being patient with their title changes here might be an indication that they're trying to create that legacy. You said he's trying to go back to a different time. Maybe he's trying to have those, you know, like the early 90s when you had title reigns that lasted closer to a year than less than a year. So I understand, but I also think that they're being a little too harsh on that aspect.
But it's not really that, like, I don't know if we're trying to necessarily be harsh, because it's obviously it's not something that they can control. Like, excuse me. It's not like you can obviously just like pull a history out of your ass one day and, you know, say, hey, okay, here we go. Like, you absolutely have to start somewhere. It's just they have that advantage of that history, and that's
right.
That's kind of, you know, it's a drawing point.
It's like,
you know,
they're the NFL. Every NFL opponent has not succeeded, right? And part of that has to do with the lineage of the NFL.
Exactly. They're the big boys in town. You know what I mean? So,
sorry, Tom.
Yep.
No. I no apologies necessary. Good conversation. I think I agree with both of you guys because I fall on the side of appreciating the history more just because that's where I've been historically as a wrestling fan. And one of the things that's that I still consider WWE the top dogs for. But I do see, you know, for all my criticisms, I do see the same things that you are seeing, Bruce, in how the World Championship has been booked thus far. JB yeah. finishes up his email by saying, I just wanted to end by saying that obviously everyone is entitled to their opinion, but I just wanted to call out the fact that I think you're being a bit unfair to AEW from an analysis perspective because you come from a predisposition to prefer WWE NXT. I already responded to how I feel about that particular comparison point, but hopefully the points are a little better illustrated now. I said last time we spoke about this that maybe I won't speak about it again because it's all out of my system, but it spurred some editorial replies. So there we go. Very good email, good conversation. JB says, as always, love the show. And Tom, and go VIP. Love you too, JB. Thanks so much for the email, and thank you to Hitain for your very thoughtful email, and to everybody. That was like maybe the meatiest mailbag we've ever had.
I think that absolutely, at least since I've been on the show, has probably been the meatiest mailbag we've ever had. And so with that, what I am going to do is something that we don't normally do, and we're going to leave some things untalked about tonight. Why? Because it is 12:30 in the morning Eastern time, and you know what? 6 a.m. comes very early.
Shut
up. You're not, no.
It's 7:30.
You in Hawaii over there?
It's 7:30, baby.
Yeah. So I am going to be a little bit of a Grinch here, and I'm going to end the show a little bit early. Well, not early. We went late, but in terms of content wise, in terms of stuff we talked about or didn't get to an NXT, but we had a lot to cover tonight with the Johnny Gargano stuff. We had, like I said, we had a very meaty mailbag, but still a lot of good conversation, surrounding NXT, AEW, and kind of the future and of what's going on here with the brand. And, so yeah, there was definitely a lot to talk about, and we just didn't quite get to everything here tonight. So like I said, with that, I am Nate Lindberg, and you guys can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I will have the hits and misses for tonight up by probably about noontime Eastern for you tomorrow to check out when you'd like to. You could also check out natelindberg.com, where you'll find links to this show, the hits and misses, as well as my YouTube show, where we take a therapeutic look at role-playing games. Tom, who are you?
I am at Tom Staup on Twitter, and just I agree. I agree with your call, and I feel like sometimes we should feel more comfortable not talking about stuff that was less important, like the Shaman showing up. But I will just mention,
I don't believe that. I didn't think it was Riddle. How did I not think of
Riddle?
Okay, I'm going to shut up now.
Let's not waste time on it.
Yep, I'm going to shut up now.
Yes. But I will mention that Hayes versus Loomis was excellent. I really loved what they did in that match. Bruce touched on that a bit as well, and I agree with him. I tweeted before the show, if they put Yulisa Leon on the show, I will be happy, and they did, so I was happy. Again, I just think she's really, really promising here. And, there was one other thing.
Malcolm Bivens saying, why is everyone around here so disrespectful?
I love that.
That was really good, too. That was really good. I guess Yulisa Leon and Hayes versus Loomis were really the two big things I wanted to mention briefly. But at Tom Staup is where you can find all of my links on Twitter to, you know, movie reviews, stock car racing videos from the New Smyrna Speedway, Willing Creatures, the Actual Play D&D podcast. Actually, the next episode that is dropping is my solo session where my character spans a 10-year period that we're taking in the storyline, and my goal going into it was to build my own basically fortress in an abandoned city that had collapsed in an uprising, and to raise all of the city's dead that died in the uprising to make my own army. So you can listen to that episode when it comes out on Saturday to see how that goes.
And Bruce.
So let me just say, of course, that Torch listeners, you know, if you've read my reports and heard me on here, I criticize WWE heavily as well. So it's not just an AEW thing, right? But you can find me. So right now I'm doing the live reports or the All Perspective reports for Raw on Monday night. On Twitter, you can find me at B_Lee253. And is it all right with you, too, if I make the announcement of the future for myself?
Do it up. Do it up.
Okay. Oh, hey, yeah, sure.
So I guess it's the best time to announce that at the end of the year, I will be finished with Raw, and starting on the January 4th show, I'll be switching my All Perspective reports to NXT on Tuesday nights. So if you are VIP and you want to try your hand at live reporting and you want to try and do Raw, email Wade. Now's a good time because you'd have several weeks to kind of build yourself up to doing a live report. But on Tuesday, January 4th, you will now find an All Perspective report for NXT alongside Kelly Wells' report. And NXT has not had an All Perspective since somewhere around the middle of summertime. So you'll get two perspectives. What you've seen from me on Raw is what you're going to see here more on NXT, with me recalibrating a little bit to understand that it's not going to be as polished, not going to be as crisp, it's developmental. So I'm going to keep that in mind. But starting January 4th, I'll be here. You might also hear me on the pod more moving forward as the All Perspective reporter. So just letting you all know that for the future. That way, if you like me, you can keep tuning in. And if you hate me, you can not tune in as well.
That's right. That's right. Now, yeah, Bruce would probably hear him a little bit more on the pod, kind of as like the more official backup replacement for, you know, the nights when Kelly just decides he's too good for us and wants to hang out with his brother and open up cards with Robert Stone's signature on them.
Oh, Robert Stone is funny today, too.
Go ahead. I was going to say we usually keep that stuff behind the scenes, but he did. Yeah, he said, sorry, I can't do it tonight, which is fine. We, you know, okay, as listeners will know, we occasionally have weeks where we're not up to it. But he didn't say why, and I was like, all right, I'm not going to pry. And then during NXT, he's like, I just opened a baseball card of Robert Stone. I'm like, dude, come on.
Seriously? Like, you couldn't watch the show tonight, but you can open up trading cards, right? He ended up getting an autographed card of Robert Stone for the second time. He got one a few weeks ago as well, and apparently one of Otis. I kind of actually want that. I'm not going to lie. I wonder if he'll mail that to me. So, guys, that's the show. Thanks for listening. We went off the rails quite a bit tonight, a little bit of a different show than normal. But, you know, maybe Kelly will be back next time and we'll get back to the normal type of a show. But this was a weird one. Why? Because I was here in the host seat.
I was here.
And Bruce was here. And Tom was here. And Darrell was here. And Keith was here. And we had a good time tonight, guys. And it's time to say goodnight. Good night.